differences in temperature in different directions gives you a lot of information about what the original Big Bang was like and how that universe is really expanding. Go ahead with your comments on this one, Paul, or whatever. WS2N, K2LIW.
Yeah, that was the Kobe was the first one, and then WMAP. But I think I sent you a QSL. My QSL card is a picture of the galaxy, Milky Way galaxy, taken from the Kobe spacecraft, and then, you know, put out by NASA. So I wound up with that on my QSL card. Theory is that all, you know, all radio waves go on forever. Someday they might get out there. It's going to be on the weak side, but they'll get there. Just want to mention this Gaia spacecraft is a... See, what happened years ago, back in the late 80s, 1980s into early 1990s, they had a spacecraft that European Space Agency put up called Hipparcos, H-I-P-P-A-R-C-O-S. You know, that was an acronym for the High Precision Parallax Collecting Satellite. So they did some early studies with this thing, and it was successful. At the time, they put it into a geosynchronous transfer orbit, but it went so well. They built this Gaia, finally got that up there all these decades later. And that's why they decided to put it at L2. You can't get any better location than that. That's where it's at. Solar power, by the way, it's not a... They don't have an RTG on the radioisotope. Thermoelectric generator, it's just a solar panel. But it's going to work all these years.
I think you said that that's a 5-year mission. And so, you said it, but I've forgotten. What's the approximate prediction as to the number of exoplanets Gaia is likely to discover? And would it be safe to say within the next 2 months it will be on the job at Lagrange Point number 2 and beginning to make measurements of all those exoplanets? Over to you, Paul, WS2N, K2LIW.
I know it usually takes a month or two to calibrate everything once they get these things into position, so I don't know how soon they'll actually get our real data back. But they said thousands of exoplanets. Now, that's just a sidebar for the mission. The main mission is to look at 1 billion. 1 billion. That's 1,000 million stars, and accurately measure the location, the distance from Earth, and a relative speed, you know, to one another. So they'll have a good picture, an accurate picture of the distance. Picture of our surroundings of all these different stars. That's the main goal of this thing. So look for asteroids and all this other stuff is secondary. Main goal is 1 billion stars, and they are going to use parallax, parallax system. They had some bizarre information on the accuracy, like looking at a human hair from 1,000 miles away, something like that, or somebody's thumb on the moon from Earth, you know. That kind of an accuracy they're looking for. Back to you.
Very fine, Paul. Boy, that's going to be a fun project. So a billion stars it's going to be looking at for accurate positioning, as well as looking for exoplanets. Wow. Okay. Since it's doing a little bit of everything, now I'm going to really stretch it, Paul. Is it also capable of finding near-Earth objects? In other words, some of these comets and asteroids, which... in theory, you might be able to hit the Earth. Will it be able to detect those also, to your knowledge, Paul? WS2N, K2LIW.
Well, they said asteroids and stuff, but, you know, whether they're going to look for comets, I didn't see that on the list. But, you know, this is a spinning thing. I don't know if they're going to have it where it's going to stop there at one point in space. You're not going to get a deep field picture like you do with Hubble. So I think it's that. And it's 1 billion stars. I think you just said 1 million. So I'm saying 100. No, I'm saying 1,000 million. Well, let me put it this way: 1 billion with a B. Maybe that sounds better. That's what they're looking at, and that's why there's 1 billion pixels on the camera compared to 5,000 on Hubble. Back here.
Boy, that's going to be busy. That's going to be a busy spacecraft. Wow. And I get the impression that that's a joint effort between European Space Agency and the United States. Well done. Lots of good hardware we're doing up in Hubble. A lot of good things to be looking forward to. The 127.25 astronomical units where Voyager is right now, the furthest piece of hardware that the United States has ever launched, at 670 million miles per hour, which is the speed of light. It takes 17.7 hours for the signal to go up, another 17 hours to come back down from the Voyager. So, speaking to Voyager, if you just give Voyager a ping, so to speak, and say, hey, talk to me right now, it takes 35.34 hours to get an answer at the speed of light. That's very strong piece of evidence that a radio signal never stops, goes on forever. Wilkinson and Fitzpatrick probe measuring to the nearest microkelvin is another example of a radio signal once issued never stops, goes everywhere. It's hard to believe. If you actually calculate, like when you and I put a 100-watt signal into an 80-meter dipole, we know that we're launching real electrons down that transmission line. Let me drop. We know we're launching real electrons down that transmission line. And if you can calculate how far each one of those electrons wiggle back and forth, they're really marbles in a pipe, and you can calculate how far they wiggle back and forth because of the 100 watts you've launched. Okay? When you get a micro watt type signal coming down your antenna, and you try to calculate how far do the electrons move, you come up with answers that are a small fraction of the diameter of an electron, proton, neutron, etc. How in the world can such a tiny amount of motion still constitute a measurable amount of signal? It's a hard one to contemplate, but it does it. And, how weak a signal can you listen to? There is no limit. How far can a signal be transmitted? And here we are, roughly a 20-watt signal from Voyager at, what was the number I calculated? 11.8 million miles away and increasing. At some nice, great, big velocity. Authors, Carrie and Schmidt, in this book, Witness to Roswell. Each of them put 20 years of their life into this project. These two investigative reporters went to Roswell with the strong intention of let's put this story to bed. The story has been around for 65 years. It was roughly July 4th, 1947, when a crash of something occurred in Roswell. And lots of controversy ever since. A hell of a lot of sensationalistic, not well-written books. These guys put 20 years of their life into it because they started off saying, let's put this to bed. And they started interviewing people. By the time they got there, the third time interviewing some of those, eventually 600 people. They interviewed 600 people throughout those 20 years each. 40 man years into this project. They didn't do it to get rich quick. The book is selling for $12 and change. And Roswell, 600 people in Roswell are not coming up with this story simply to get tourists to go to Roswell. There's not that much money to be made. That's not what's going on. Something really did happen. There wasn't one crash site. There were three crash sites. In Corona, New Mexico, Roswell, New Mexico, and another...
Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
In these very remote sites, one of those crash sites has got a 500-foot gash in the ground with scorched earth around it. You're going to tell me that a weather balloon did that on three separate sites? That doesn't ring true. There's a hell of a lot of things that don't ring true, if you know what I mean, as to the simple explanation. There's a number of my friends who are saying that anybody who believes in UFOs is really influenced by leprechauns and fairies and whatever. And so a couple of my friends I have mailed the book to. I bought a copy of the book and mailed it to a couple of my friends. And these are people who have got very strong beliefs in it, who think that something occurred at Roswell of an extraterrestrial nature, that these people are all crazy and just making up stories. I said, okay, read this book. The book only contains 308 pages, 311 pages. I say, tell me which portion of the book you think has the greatest error. Read the book, tell me which portion of the book has the greatest error. And I haven't heard an answer from either one of them. If they really read it, they're going to say, well, there's an awful lot of evidence that something did take place over a couple of week period, starting at roughly July 4th, 1947, near the town of Roswell or near the town of Corona, New Mexico. Something occurred. My other philosophy on this one is that as you study the number of exoplanets, as you study where we are in the...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
As we study the number of number of times we've been humbled, in which we used to believe the Earth is the center of the universe, we used to believe, we slowly accepted that we're part of the solar system, we're part of a... galaxy. We're part of a local galactic group. The galactic group is part of the universe. We realize that we're in the middle of everything. We've got a medium-sized planet, a medium-sized sun, a medium-sized solar system, a medium-sized galaxy, a medium-sized galactic group in a medium section of the whole universe. Of all the life that's out there, I'm convinced half of it, biologically speaking, is ahead of us, and half of it is behind us. Some of those guys out there have had many millions and maybe a billion years head start on us. Look at the amount of progress we've made in the last 100 years. Can you imagine if you give somebody a million years head start over us, what they're able to achieve? So to think that nobody could possibly travel in interstellar distance and nobody has curiosity is very naive. Real progress takes place because somebody has scientific curiosity. As such, would they really consider us interesting? Well, do we consider animals and plants that we study interesting? If you've got curiosity, you do, and there's good information you get out of it. And there's a zillion ways that synthesis can take place. So I do recommend, if you have the slightest interest in the subject, even if you're a skeptical person, let me drop. I do recommend you pick up a copy of that book. It's not a big investment in both dollars or your time to read it. And with that amount of research that these guys put into it, and they're not getting rich quick, that wasn't their motivation. As I told you, their motivation was to finally put the story to bed. And they suddenly realized they can't do it. Too darn many people saw something. Too much cover-up was taking place because at the time, the Roswell Army Air Field, which was the thing that was going to become an was going to become Air Force Base, they didn't know what that hardware was. In the beginning, they were afraid that it was Soviet hardware, Russian hardware. They weren't sure. And as such, they wanted to have the uninterrupted period in order to study it, to reverse engineer it. And there's evidence that our so-called breakthroughs in fiber optics quite possibly came from reverse engineering that hardware, among other pieces of reverse engineering did take place. Okay. I'm tempted to end the tech net a little bit early tonight because somebody really doesn't want us to be here. Once again, what you hear on the input, let me drop. What you hear on the input, please press the reverse button. Tell us how strong, what time you heard it, what direction you think it's coming from, and where you were located at the time. And please mail that information to RFI at amateurradio@limark.org. RFI at limark.org. RFI stands for Radio Frequency Interference. And Limark, as you know, is Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club. Apparently there is an individual in the New York City area that's very disgruntled. Obvious by the number of hours of day and night that he can do this, he most likely is unemployed and unhappy about that, and getting even with the world. And so we're going to have to pin him down and convince him that this is not what society likes to put up. I'm going to try another infinite input and see if I can get through that way. Stand by. KQLIW. What did you see at Ham Radio University? What did you like, and what do you think can be improved? Give me your call letters right now. T2RIW and the TechNet.
Dick, unfortunately, I think we've lost most of our audience.
Yep, I hear you, John. It may be time we take an early night off. What do you think? KC2WGB, KGYW.
Unfortunately, that might be a good decision. I just wanted to wish everybody a happy new year and a healthy new year, and maybe things will improve. But a sad state.
Dick, WHCDL.
Go right ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I have some info to give you. Can I give you a phone call?
You sure can. Fire away.
All right. I'm WHCDL.
Looks like this was TechNet number 1488 of the series that began in 1982, I think. Although 82 CD, I think it was, brought to my attention. I may be off by half a year as to the real origin of the TechNet. 73, you all. Be kind to each other. I wish that individual would honor that. He should be kind to other people, even though he's unhappy. 73, you all. Bye-bye for now. KQLIW clear.
Good night, Dick. Good night, John. And 2APG.
Good night, gentlemen. Good tech man, anyway. You can't really spoil perfection, so he can try. This is KC2WGB.
Happy New Year, guys. This is WS2N73.
Hey, Paul, got a quick question for you.
I might have to turn my antenna, but go ahead.
He pulled it back on itself, and we know that there's other civilizations out there, maybe a million years. You think about all this radio traffic and all the RF transmissions, and any of our
probably reflected back from the ionosphere. So it really does stay pretty much around the Earth itself and probably gets converted into other forms of energy rather than just continue to radiate out into the open space. But unless you probably had a frequency and a circular polarized antenna focused out there, those are probably really the only signals, you know, that probably have any serious kind of amplitude that probably could be detected somewhere else. KC2QIQ.
Interesting point of view. Yeah, that has a low validity. Absolutely. It's just amazing. Have you heard anything that sounds like information? In all the stuff we've got, and I know they're spending a lot of time that has run out of time.
John, I wish I could keep this QSO up, but I think what's happening is there's so much jamming going on. He's pretty much 90% on top of you. I've been listening on the side, though. KC2QIQ.
I was wishing you a happy new year. All right. KC2WGZ. We'll be listening.
Very good, John. Happy new year to you as well. KC2QIQ, and everybody else listening on the net as well who's suffered through all this. KC2QIQ.
Where are you coming through the, Southern?
No, I'm just using a lot of power on a high gain beam into 2585. KC2QIQ.
Okay, I just switch back to Southern. Very good.
WGB.
Repeat the WGB into XGN. It's quite different sound of your voice when I'm here. How are you getting me out?
Yeah, I hear you fine. No problem. You may be coming through a different way. Slight change in the audio, but no problem, Papa.
Currently connected to reflector 9126.
Working. 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 Working.
Thank you. repeater tonight.
This is AC2IS. I don't know if you can copy me. I'm working 5 watts from an HT in a poor location. But apparently the two receivers are not linked at this moment. I don't know what's going on with that.
Absolutely. I found, well, I guess, you know, it goes without saying. you can walk 2 feet to one direction and lose all contact, and then walk 2 feet the other way and talk to somebody in Utah.
Right, I'm not expecting to get anyone in Utah on 2 meters here, although the I suppose the repeater could be linked IRLP to Utah somewhere. AC2IS.
KC2KCP. Go ahead, KCP. KC2KZP. EZP, I copy you.
Yeah, just testing out a radio, I think.
Well, this is the place to do it. That's what I've been doing, and AC2IS was kind enough to get back to me. So, where are you located?
About a mile away from the repeater.
82 DIG.
I'm over in New High Park.
Right, Park to Levittown, AC2IS, do you copy KZP?
Assuming that that's all he's saying is his call sign, then yes. Otherwise, I don't think I'm hearing him.
He mentioned that he was right by the repeater, and the repeater is in New Hyde Park, so you've got a pretty good jump there from this concert to New Hyde Park on an HT. So you should be pretty happy with that radio. Thank you.